Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of New Books in Japanese Studies, a podcast channel of the New Books Network. I am Jingyi Lee from the University of Arizona. Joining us today is Dr. Victoria Kim. She is the chief editor of a new volume, The Politics of International Marriage in Japan, which was published by Rutgers University Press this month. Victoria is currently an associate professor of sociology at Osaka University in Japan. This book is an in-depth analysis of international marriage in contemporary Japan. The authors explore how relationships are affected by Japan's policies on marriage, migration, and gender. Welcome, Dr. Kim. Victoria, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Can you tell us briefly about yourself, actually? What do you mainly research and teach about?
I'm originally from Kazakhstan, and I studied Japanese language when I was there for my undergraduate degree. And when I came to Japan, I came here to study at graduate school. And I decided to, I was interested in women's position in society. I kind of stumbled across the topic of international marriage because it got very popular at that moment in post-Soviet countries. And I was wondering how it is like in Japan. And I started looking for Russian couples in Japan. And so that's how my research topic went into international marriages. Then eventually, because I studied sociology for my graduate degree, I have been teaching sociology-related topics in English program in Osaka University, and I teach about multicultural societies, international marriages, Japanese society, and so forth. So these are my research topics, current research topics, and they're related to my teaching as well.
Sounds great. So what prompted you and the co-authors to work on this volume? And might I ask, the book cover is very cute, two little figures on the continent of Japan with balloons of hearts. Is there a story behind this cover?
Yes, thank you. So I was offered by the Rutgers editor, Jasper Chan, to start thinking about book cover a while ago. And my brother, he can do a lot of editing. He does website covers. So we talked about it, and I told him I want some map there, and I want hearts falling down from the sky. And I gave him general idea, and when this one came, I liked it a lot. And then I made a couple of photos, but when I sent them to our editor, Jasper, he was like, oh, this one stands out the most, so we want this one. And so that's how we got into this book cover. So, but as for the book, I was thinking that after writing my PhD thesis on this topic, I was thinking that I need to do publishing, like, and write book. And while I was thinking, the editor of this series, The Politics of Marriage and Gender, Peter Berta, he actually contacted me. He found me on academia, and he contacted me and invited to contribute to the series. And that's how, like, I decided to write this book. So I invited other two authors because they had available data sets. While my main research topic is international marriage, their main research topic is a bit different, but because it was my initiative, that's how it worked out.
That's amazing. Now, this word, this phrase, international marriage, we hear it very often. We talk about, but in this book, how do you define it? Can you give us a brief definition of international marriage?
So usually, these sort of marriages, they are the called like mixed marriages or cross-border marriages. The very like general name for these marriages is cross-border marriages because it's one of the spouses who crosses border for marriage or partnership reasons, and that's why we call them cross-border marriages. But here, first thing, it was in Japanese language, it's called kokosaike-kon, and if we have direct translation, it will be international marriage. That was the first reason why I decided to go with international marriage rather than cross-border marriage, because it shows the it geographically locates these marriages in Japan. And second reason is because it is not only about crossing borders, it's about different legal, political, and social influences on marriage. That's why I decided that it should be international marriage that will show these different types of relationship between countries and between people that are included in this, that is not really emphasized in cross-border marriage terms. So that's how it became international marriage.
And are there a lot of international marriages in Japan, or has there been an increase? And I guess what's more important is, do they usually end well?
Okay, so this is a hard question. The number of international marriages has been increasing from 1980s, from mid-1980s till 2005-2006. And there were different reasons for these marriages to increase. So first it was rural marriages, and then there was like a bit of mail order bride, so-called mail order bride marriages, and then there was a big group of entertainers who came to Japan to work in like as hostesses, like in the bars where they entertain people by singing and drinking with them. So a lot of those women started getting married to Japanese men, but there was a bit of kind of political movement in 2000s actually, where Japan was listed as one of the countries that is participating in human trafficking, and Japan was listed as a tier two country by American Department of State. I think that was compiling this trafficking in humans report. And since then, entertainer visa was really reduced, and the issuance of this visa was reduced for women who come from Philippines or former Soviet Union countries. And since then, the number started really dropped drastically. So by 2004, 2005, there was like more than 40,000 marriages, international marriages. And then since then, the number dropped and like went up like all the way to 20,000 per year. And currently they started going up again, but they did not reach such huge level as it was like in 2000s. And as for divorces, yes, there are more divorces among international couples than among, let's say, endogamous Japanese couples. So, and we cannot really calculate how many marriages end up in divorces, but usually for 20,000 married couples, these days there is about 11,000-12,000 divorcing couples. So it's the statistics is quite the statistics of divorces is quite big, let's say. Yeah.
Indeed, it's a bit surprising to hear. And this whole international marriage thing sounds actually quite complicated historically. So what aspects in this book do you focus on to unpack the problems in international marriage?
So, well, my idea was to start from first how these marriages are viewed from outside. And I went into this academic discourse on international marriages. And because there are plenty of studies that address international marriages, I like looked through these and I tried to kind of identify how they present couples and how they present partners in these marriages. So I talk about this academic discourse from camera lens perspective. So you can see as if we look at the photograph or compare different images and how people are presented in these images. So that was for academic discourse chapter. And then next chapter was to discuss historical background of the international marriages, when they started. And when I started reading secondary sources, I found out that the unions between Japanese and foreigners can be traced all the way till 17th century. So and it was very interesting to see how the state was treating them at different periods of time. So then there is like this historical background. And from that point, that's where like my co-authors come in, where we start talking about actual couples. And well, first thing is, who marries whom? And I think this is a big question that everybody is interested, because it's like, well, why do particular people decide to get married with foreign nationals? And that's where I thought of, we can think about this economic conditions. We can think about the attraction of Japan as like very different cultural place. And so I was thinking how to combine all these couples. And I came up with these four categories for those ones who are inside Japan, who met inside Japan, for those ones who met outside Japan. And so that's the chapter on how people choose each other. And then there is chapter on love, and because another big question is, well, do they really love each other? And here it's not about, well, yes, they do love each other, or no, they don't love each other. It's about how we like how the state looks at the at love in marriages and how people look at it and how they might have very different understanding. And it's general because we are talking about migration process that is happening simultaneously with marriage and how this migration process is affected affects the idea of love in these marriages. So that was the idea of the chapter. And then other two chapters, next two chapters, talk actually about how people organize their life already while they're in marriage, how they negotiate different aspects of their lives. And also one of the chapters, later chapter, is about children in mixed heritage children, and mostly about, of course, how couples work on their like bilingual skills, bicultural skills. So these are like also important aspects. And we kind of, I finished there on a bit sad note on international divorce, but I think it's kind of because it's not only about marriage, it's also about how, like, recently I talked with one of my professors who said, well, you know, marriage is like one moment in life, and then there is very long life after that. So how do you talk about this part? And I tried to cover different aspects, and of course, divorce it was a very important part of that life, because there are conflicts, and some conflicts do not end well; they end in divorce. So I thought that this is important bit that we should cover. So this is briefly about, yeah.
I'd like to return to one of the earlier points you made about the historical background of international marriage. So one focus of this book is the government policies. So can you tell us more about the policies from the government after the Second World War, after Japan sort of opened up to the global, to the other countries?
Okay, so after the Second World War, the biggest number of international marriages back then was with between Japanese women and foreign men, actually. And those marriages were with soldiers from allied powers that were in Japan, stationed in Japan. And those marriages were not really encouraged. And many of them were actually, like, there was a lot of bureaucratic issues. And so couples could not live together. And they had to, like, jump through a lot of hoops in order to finally live with each other or get married with each other. And but there were, like, the beginning was with these unions. And the statistics on international marriages appears in Japanese sources from 1965, official Japanese sources. At that point, there was 4,065, I think, international marriages, and the majority were between Japanese women and foreign men. But then these numbers, there were, like, majority of Japanese women getting married with foreign men for a while. But I think by the 1970s, this number reversed. And around 1970s, this number reversed. And then later, since then, the majority of marriages are usually between Japanese men and foreign women, even though, like, when I talk to my students and when I ask them, how many do you think like who gets married with foreign nationals more, Japanese women or Japanese men, they tend to say that it is Japanese women because there is this tendency. Well, first of all, if you go to the walk around in Tokyo or Osaka, you will see a lot of international couples of Western men and Japanese women, and they're more visible because when it comes to marriages between Japanese men and foreign women, there are a lot of Asian women and they might be less visible. So the general image is that there are more Japanese women getting married with foreigners, but actually it's the other way around.
Well, that's good to hear. Another question that I think a lot of people will be interested about international marriages, do they actually love each other? But you just mentioned that it's really not about the answer of whether yes, they do or no, they don't. So in this book, how do your studies approach this question and what did you find?
So it was kind of bothering me for a while. What is this idea of do these people love each other or not? And because we all have, it's not one reason to get married, right? We have multiple reasons to choose partners. And when I looked at international couples and when I was asking them actually about, well, why did you get married with each other? And different people were giving me very different reasons, right? Some women were like, well, it's not about money. It's because he takes good care about me. I know he will be like very good husband. That's why I chose him. And some men were like, well, she's blonde. I like blondes. That's why like I got married with her. One of the men, he actually gave very kind of rational reason. He was, well, I think Western women quite emancipated and Japanese women are too traditional and Russians are somewhere in between. So they can have fun, but then at the same time, they be traditional. So that's what I like about Russian women. So they had these different reasons. And can we say that it is love? Maybe for them it is love. And so the opposite question was like, well, how they will this will be measured by the state, and how what do they have to how they have to show their love so they it can be accepted by the state, and they can get the spouse visa. They can prove their love. And so I found several papers that were actually discussing what sort of measures different consulates around the world, those were European consulates, have in order to detect whether the couple loves each other, what sort of questions they ask. And then at that point, I remembered that it happens in the same way in Japan, because I've heard from some women, one of the couples, they had more than 20 years age difference among my participants. And the husband, when I was interviewing him, he was like, oh, I was accused of human trafficking. They thought that I would bring my wife here to Japan and sell her to send her to sell sex. And then I was like, oh, so like you also like asked by the consulate, by officials about like your relationship. And then some other women started coming up, and they were talking about how if the marriage is considered to be like a marriage for convenience, they would be invited to interviews in the consul, in the immigration office, immigration police, and they would be asked questions separately. So the husband will be asked questions, and then the wife will be asked the same set of questions, and then they will compare their answers. And so they would ask questions like, oh, which side of the bed does your husband sleep on? When do you have like garbage days? Like for like what else? What is the brand of your television? So to detect whether they leave each other. And so what I realized, there were questions like, oh, what is the color of your husband's underwear today? And some of the women that were in my focus group, they were like, well, I have no idea. Like, I didn't pay attention today. How can these women respond to these questions? So that was very interesting. And I realized that there is this image of how international marriage should be, international couple should like communicate, should be, and this image is compared to what like to the reality of these couples. And so because this contrast was very interesting, and how couples define their love and their relationship and how the state defines it, so that's where like I talked about their love.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
That's very interesting indeed. And I assume how love is measured differ in different cultures, right? So how do you think the role of cultural differences is in international marriages?
The role of cultural differences. It's a very interesting question. I can see a lot of couples suffering because of their cultural differences, but they do not. They tend not to acknowledge it. And actually, in the beginning of the book, I placed several citations that actually reflect this. And one of the persons who was Japanese husband of a Russian wife, he said, well, my wife is, first of all, my wife. She is not a Russian person. She is not somebody else. She is a wife. And I see her as a woman. But I think they kind of tend to overlook this idea that we come with this cultural baggage. And a lot of our definitions and interpretations come from culture. And there was another, there was many examples where many women were telling me, like, well, you know, men essentially are the same. And outside they might look differently, but inside they're all the same. And so when I actually looked into this, this is not this cultural difference issue. It wasn't really covered in this book in this sort of from this cultural perspective. But I have another paper where I see how women and men actually look at each other, at their actions and how they interpret and their expectations towards each other. And so in this book, we talked about how these cultural differences appear in household organization. So whether they whether they organize household based on Japanese traditions and customs, or on based on foreign spouses' customs, and how they actually decide, and what are the factors that kind of affect this sort of decisions. So that was the idea of these cultural differences discussed in the book.
That's very interesting. So would you say this is more about different understanding of gender roles in different cultures then?
Yes, I think it's very much gender roles, and it's also families where couples socialized, and also the ideal images of what is it, how it is supposed to be, because in many cases there were couples where I had one of the participants, she said, well, in my family home, it was there was no order, gender roles were really distorted, my mom was working, my father was working, and when everybody did something, as they thought is necessary, and so they to kind of to fulfill their roles, there was no really clear division of labor. And she said, that's why in my own home, I'm doing it the way it is convenient for me. So that's how I organize this. But there were also couples, women who were raised by just their mothers. And it was interesting how they were providing this. Well, husband should be this way. They have to do this sort of things inside the home and outside the home. And so I think it's their general ideal, and they are looking into how to shape their family relationship, their couple relationship, into this ideal image. So that was also one of the ways for them to organize their life.
Fascinating. When I was reading about that part in the book, it reminded me of stories that my friends told me. My friends, they were many of my international friends, non-Japanese friends, they were telling me how they broke up with their Japanese boyfriends because their Japanese boyfriends weren't happy that they weren't making them breakfast every day. And it was, after reading this book, that part somehow made more sense. But this brings me to my next question, which is the sadder part of your book. So you mentioned that divorce rate of international marriages is higher than non-international ones. What are some of the reasons?
Well, again, I think there is no one particular reason usually, and it kind of piles up. And of course, one of the difficulties for women to for foreign women in Japan to divorce is that what will happen with them and with their children after the divorce. So many it's not an easy decision, and the way it is organized in Japan is that women are totally dependent on their husbands economically after they get married, and the system of kindergartens, the system of schools, it requires one of the parents to be more or less to have more free time so they can take care of children, take care of the household. And because of that, and because of course, when women migrate to Japan, they can do limited number of work, of jobs, right? And their income is quite low compared to men. So when this sort of problems come up, when they decide to it can be like some domestic issues. Of course, there are cases of domestic violence. They're not prevalent, but there are cases of violence, and that's where women have to get divorced. But like misunderstandings or just lack of communication, and some women just say, "Well, we don't talk. We like there is no conversations." And one of the women whose example I actually wrote in the book, she said, "Well, when he was at home, I was really annoyed. And when he was away, like living overseas at work, I felt so like comfortable and peaceful." So, and she said, "We didn't talk. We like it was the stage where we stopped even fighting. So we just didn't talk." And there were other couple of women who also had this conversation that they didn't talk, or like conflicts were not really like already like went to the point where they did not want to live with each other. And so at this point, they like, I guess there is this pile of problems of different issues in the couple that eventually led to the divorce, right? And so many women actually had this question, well, do I stay in Japan? Do I go back home? And what will happen with children? What will happen with me? And if I stay in Japan, because they're not economically that well off, and they will have to work several jobs and to take care of children, and so they can like survive, right? And so I guess even despite that, there are still many couples that divorce. So my understanding there is that many actually women from former Soviet Union, they and I'm too, we come from this culture where divorce is an option. And and women do survive after divorce. So I think that gives many of them this courage to still divorce and look for other husbands, look to build their own lives. And so one of what I noticed is that there were like several groups of people. One group was very pragmatic, I guess. They were like preparing beforehand. They were like, "Well, we don't know what will happen with us, and this is foreign country, and so I will not like give birth to many children, so I will have only one child, and so I can protect myself. I can survive with one child if we just two of us, I divorce." And some couples were like, "Okay, well, I don't really want to divorce, but well, if something happens, I will have to." So they're kind of in the middle. And another group was that, well, it's like no matter what, I'll have to stay in this marriage. So there was these three groups, and they had their different understanding of why they would like to divorce or would not want to divorce. And so based on these ideas, I think, of course, that was changing with time for some of them. But usually they kind of had this tendency either to divorce or like to stay in marriage. Yes.
On a somewhat relevant note, but in this case, the positions are kind of reversed. So I assume you've heard of this news recently that a Frenchman sued his Japanese wife for kidnapping his own kids. And the French government, even though the French government issued actually a warrant for her, the Japanese government hasn't commented on this matter. So how do incidents like this reflect the policies for international marriage, and what are some of the problems in these policies from the Japanese government?
Actually, one of the participants. She's a Russian woman. She's in similar situation, and she's like kind of in this similar movement with I think his name is Vincent Fischot, right? I'm sorry if I'm not pronouncing it correctly. So one of the problems in this whole situation is that Japan doesn't have this joint custody rule. And so because of that, when they divorce, it's like it's called clear cut divorce, and where like the couple goes separate ways. And it's very interesting, even so there is this system, Japanese family register, and it's called koseki in Japanese, and where the family members are listed, and a kind of registration list. And when couples divorce, women have to, like, if she's a Japanese woman, she has to leave his her husband's koseki and create her own one, or go back to her father's family, to her father's koseki. But it can be, they can list only two generations there, so parents and children. And in that case, when woman becomes independent, and if she creates her own koseki and brings her child there, and if she decides to change her family name back, her child's name also changes, family name changes. And so what is interesting, I mean, that's the way it is done in Japan. And well, maybe one of the possible reasons is to prevent women to, like, because I guess it is about, I don't know to what extent it is the government's idea, but my understanding is that women are prevented from getting divorced that much. And so in order to do this, there are like different, like it's not that they're told not to get divorced, but a lot of policies, a lot of ways the marriage is organized is about how it's organized legally, right? And I think another also reason, it was I think even during Meiji period in 19th century, I think it was even earlier when couple was separating, children would stay with husband within the household, and if women wanted to leave, they would leave on their own, right? And so I guess it's this family institution, how it's organized in Japan. That's my understanding. That's where this problem of not joint custody comes from. And actually, I saw a couple of cases where, and one of the cases I described in the book, where this woman, she was used to this Russian way of doing things, and when her husband and she split up, she was like, well, Saturday, Sundays is usually Father's Day, so like when couples divorce, that's how it is. And he was picking up their child every Saturday and Sunday, and just one day he escaped with the child, and then he called her and said, well, the child will be living with me, and yeah, and we're divorcing. So I mean, I guess that's the way to organize things.
That sounds like a very disturbing way, and doesn't really do good to any party in the marriage, but
yes, I will add to this. It's like essentially it's about parents and how they like split the assets, split the children, split the custody over children. But there is not really much thinking about the children themselves. And so in the case that I described in the book, actually the wife first took two children away to her home country, and then her husband followed them and took one child away back to Japan with him. And eventually what happened is that children grew up separately and they even had troubles communicating. Well, eventually they could meet up and a younger child could study Japanese language. But it was kind of heartbreaking for both of them because at some point their mother was telling me, well, because the younger child who lives with me, he can speak only Russian and the older child can speak only Japanese, I have to sit there and interpret for them. So there, and I guess so both parents could not see their children like in a civilized way, and children could not meet because of the adults' conflicts. So yes, we have to also think about children's side.
Yeah, I certainly hope they improve at least part of these policies in the future. But okay, these are all really heavy questions, and my last question is also kind of heavy. But with the pandemic and Japan's entry bans separating families, how have international marriages been affected?
I think when at the beginning of the pandemic, when like the borders got closed for everybody, like even for permanent residents, and it was March, right? And in Japan, it's holiday time where when women usually go back to their home countries. So there were many international couples who got separated because of they went to visit their grandmothers, grandfathers back in Russia or in other women's countries. And because they could not come back. And it's not that their children could not come back. Their children are Japanese nationals. Japanese nationals could come back, but mothers could not come back because they do not naturalize into Japanese citizenship. So usually it's permanent residence that they have. And what happened, we had there is Facebook Russian community, and they actually started talking about this issue. A lot of women were creating videos about how they're actually stranded overseas and they cannot come back to their homes and children cannot come back to their schools. And eventually there was organized, I think, a plane from Russia to bring these people back home. So it was very helpful and many couples could return. Since then, I think after last year's October, what happened was that since then, spouses of Japanese nationals or permanent residents, it's called a special kind of article, and so these people can still come back and live and come back. But of course, many of them, because of the pandemic, because we don't know what will happen tomorrow, many couples still stay at home just to avoid excessive traveling and all this like quarantine and the periods where like they cannot go out of the hotel and so forth. But yes, so it got much better from last October. In the beginning, it was quite hard, but later it got a bit easier on international couples. And it was very interesting. I organized a bit of a survey on for this Russian community, and many of them were asking, I was like, at the end of my questionnaire, I asked, do you have any questions? And I've received a lot of questions. When can I travel back home? And so it was very interesting how they really want to go back home. And yeah, so it's a bit easier for spouses of Japanese nationals. It's more difficult for for people with other types of visa, actually.
Well, it's good to hear that some families can reunite at least, but I hope more families can spend the holidays with their family members this year. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us today on the channel. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you too for your questions, and it was very interesting to chat.
Thank you. And for our listeners who want to learn more about this book, check out The Politics of International Marriage in Japan, edited by Dr. Victoria Kim. This is Jin Yi from New Books in Japanese Studies, and I will see you next year. Happy holidays.